must have been other roads back into the 18th century. I mean, you read Combs and Hume and Barclay and all that stuff.
No, he didn't preach. Great Enlightenment. But not Barclay. I heard the name.
Yes.
I didn't know. But then I had to.
Yes.
I had to. Nobody would have come and told me to read Helvetius or Diderot or Holbach. But I'm a brilliant writer. The separate essays on these people as part of the history of the period, which he didn't call it that, he called it on the subtitle of the People's Center, or on the monistic principle. In fact, chapter by chapter, he talks about these different people. Saint-Simon, Fourier, all these people come through the final. So it happens. And that's what made me interested in these aspects of the central. Genesis is the opposition to it. Has the hammer, all this comes to think of it.
So it would be true to say that a great deal of your distinctive intellectual past comes from being the only Anglo-Saxon to pay significant attention to forgotten 19th century Russian critics and writers.
No, that's not said. No, he's the man.
Yes,
the new statesman wrote a book about him.
Yes.
Not a good book.
But
I read it.
So you were not alone. Yes.
Oh, no, people did. I mean, there must have been people.
No, what I meant was.
I was the only person who ever left on the knock.
Yes.
That's certainly true.
Yes. But you're the only person to go to that route via Plekhanov.
Oh, absolutely.
And then via.
No doubt. Via Mark Plekhanov.
Yes.
Via Plekhanov to them. And I was rather caught with them. I liked them.
Yes.
There's a reason. There's a direction. I thought they were good radicals. I'm always suspected now of being rather too interested in the reactions that my fundamental views performed by these people. And by the Enlightenment, which I'm in some sense following. Quite all that nowadays.
And the exact meaning of in some sense will take me about 75 pages to make clear, I expect.
Well, in some sense, it really means that I admired.
I'm teasing you.
Yes, I admired the anti-clericalism.
Yes.
I admired the intelligentsia.
Yes.
On the other hand, he's always said that the argument was pretty good, but the doctrine is very anti-clericalism.
Écraser l'enfant.
Écraser l'enfant. Not only that, also. Anti-metaphysics,
yes.
Anti-tradition. Anti-description, anti-reading, anti-Burke.
And yet you're very Burkean in other ways. Your reading of the Enlightenment is often described as being very Burkean.
I know, that's because of my interest in these later reactions in this. At the time when I'm reading on now, which covers them up both of them. Not just when I'm writing a book or not. I mean, when I went on holiday in 1950, no, 49, in Italy, in a reading party, from various younger philosophers, like Bell and Arnaud, in Oxford, I was reading Helvetius, with approval, making notes.
What about, speaking of 18th century figures, what about Hume? Skepticism is terribly important to you.
Yes, I'm sorry to you. Hume was important. Not the theory of deception, which I never believed in. Not the view of the external world. Then it was interesting, first of all, empiricism. Extreme empiricism, and anti a priori. It seems to me not entirely true. I mean, there are, it's qualified by saying, perfectly right. There are propositions. Tried about this, if all right, isn't that? But not in the ethics. spirit is only spirit. In the fact, everything is what it is, not another thing. And I delivered lectures on doomed ethics in the university.
So the human that's important is the human that treats as a human nature.
Yes.
Not the human of the history of England.
Not at all. I've never written.
Not the human of the political essays.
No. Not conservative and human, no. No, the human that treats human the inquiry.
Yeah.
Those two. And above all, the fact that good and bad, something to the naturalist, it means what we approve of. About strategy from God. All that made a little impression. I never believed it come to be thought it in our hearts forever. Although I admired Kant enormously.
But your first encounter with these figures would have been as a philosophical undergraduate.
Entirely. I never ceased to be that with a philosophical undergraduate in the later years. Proper disciple of human evolution, only in the respect of opposition to Chuck Taylor. I didn't believe in teleology. I didn't believe that history was marching for the goal. I didn't believe that everything in the universe had a purpose implanted in it by nature or by God. That's really my humanism. Everything is just there. One thing after another. One damn thing after another. That's true. Everything except from everything else. They just do follow irregular sequences. They needn't have done. Contingency.
One of the other, since we're talking about your intellectual development in the 30s, and these strands of Lacan taking back to the 18th century, giving him a sense of contingency. One of the things that strikes me in your letters is that one of the really important sources of intellectual development, or a foil against which you thought a great deal, were novels and fiction, chiefly James.
No.
You think of, there are a lot of letters to Elizabeth Bowen and to others about Henry James, in which you basically say you're fed up with James for rather complicated but very interesting reasons, which are that he talks about the emotions without actually having them. There's something frozen and dead.
Probably an awful nonsense. I probably talk nonsense about James. He was never a favorite author. Never. I read him. Because of course I read him. But I never loved him. Virginia Woolf, yes. I was very, very addicted to her.
Yeah.
I have to worship her. Of his novels. He, of course, I enjoyed very much, but never thought he was genius. But I was very clever and amusing right now. Another thing, I never quite kept him around. Not being colleagues in personal relations with the rest. Novels? I must have loved novels in the days. Good ideas. Part of the Russians. To dip into. Never again.
Read Kafka, your initial conversation with Stewart
were about
Kafka.
Certainly. I read the Kalpo, I read America, and I was probably in English.
Of yours?
Yes. The man who drew attention for the West to Kafka was all the fact. And quite much. He was a very good introducer.
Would you rather dismiss the importance of James? James you read because Stephen Spencer said you should read James.
Most quite. And
Stuart,
I didn't, he read me for what was marvelous. I didn't think he was marvelous, but I did read him. Both of his till I see the great writer. I think I can step off now than I can do. I did read Rodman Lehman, that pleasure. I knew I the second, third, great European writer, and John Lehmann published a new writing. The conscience is subject, so nothing more. Stephen has always been to me about a book called, a Russian writer called Glotkov, called Cement. It was very, you know what I mean? So fundamental.
Oh, you're making that up,
Cement, yes. Cement. And it's about five your cans, the Soviet heroes. That's what that was really for.
Some silly questions about names of people. This is about...
I was impressed by Terry Tools that time. Yeah. But no one's done hitting them. We said to
take
a bus.
Really? What do you remember seeing?
The battleship Potemkin. The General Lion. Mother. Storm of Russia.
Did you have any kind of twinges of, I don't know, Russian longings when you saw this film?
None.
Because there's an absolutely wonderful sequence in the Nabokov novel in which he talks about going to see frightful Russian propaganda films and being in floods of tears, despite the fact that they were fighting.
Well,
they were about Russia.
Russia, yes, no. It did not, you know. No. It's all a bit big for me. As all did, I thought they were rather wonderful. I thought slightly ludicrous too. I'll never forget having done a life with the man sitting under a tree, old man. And I thought he called on him. And he says, I think I'm dying. Which the other man says, die then if you must. I thought that was the pretense guy.
Yes.
I said, then I think so now. That's very typical. Solemn lines that he told me there. And what other films I see? Oh dear, one more than that. Earth. Don't call Earth. I thought it was beautifully acted. And I could see that from the end. Particularly the toleration. Which I read what? I mean, what's the outlook, I think. But I thought it was rather interesting. Denied by Dietrich Bierski.
Moscow in 45, and then there's correspondence suggesting she comes to Oxford in 45-6.
That's possible. No, 30. I met her in Moscow.
Yes.
At dinner.
Yeah.
With friends. And didn't fall in love with me. And then in, that must have been by 43, I think I was head over heels in love. And then we took her to see her and gave her the maths. Same way. 2-3 times. Not all of them. And I had to meet her before I do. But to meet her in New York. Here. Main point of time. And she used to come to Washington and stayed with friends. Yeah. And that was very good. And she did. Well, then. I came back to England in 1944. I left. I then did see her in 44. In 45 I did. I came back to see from Washington on the way to Moscow. In the and I meant to get across the Potsdam and didn't. I said it was true.
Yeah.
I'm staying here for a month or two, but I went to Moscow in September. united with power from the Labour Party was elected to power. Now, how she was living in the country shop was coming to a dividend. We both fought for joy to elect the Labour Party. And then I went off to North Coast.
Were you alone with her there, or were there other people there?
Hello. Hello. And then, at that time, when I was very good in Moscow, she offered me marriage. And I was excited, I thought, and more than what I was about. But there had been a woman to meet. A certain woman. She wasn't married, married woman. Because she was obviously promiscuous, had love affairs, I mean, full lies. She wasn't a wife to me. And not me, anyway. And anyhow, I thought she didn't really like me physically. Was careful, because otherwise she would do that. If she'd made any interested move forward in me, could have been there. She didn't. But that's what that's very good. She just wanted me for company. She was there to support her husband, couldn't think of anyone else. And so that's why she thought, why not? Hitch up with me.
What if you'd made a move?
She would have made a move.
What if you made a move physically? Maybe she would have responded.
I didn't. I think she had very clear dates what she wanted. She did choose it. Regretted. Didn't want with everybody else. They didn't need.
Why did she offer you marriage? What was her motive? What was
on her? Loneliness. Boredom with her husband. She liked me very much. She liked my company very much. We were very happy together. I mean, talked. She amused me. I amused her. We were on very good terms. But actually got in the way to her jolly life together, companionship. Didn't really mind who she met. Not all that much. But I remember consulting somebody about that, and they said, I think she'd be very, very unhappy. And I said, now to come to see it, I think I would.
Wasn't you consulted?
And there was somebody called Lady Rumbold. Felicity. Yes. I was staying in Paris. I was painting in love with her too.
Is she still alive?
No. She's dead now. She's dead. Husband was a friend of mine from Oxford. He was in the bottom of the room. She was a very attractive lady. I was a great friend of hers. And when her husband went off with another lady, and we were in Washington, I was living with him and being guest. I had to hold hands. Hold hands to wife. The then's wife.
Felicity?
Yes. I did.
Right. Because Sir Anthony Rumbold Bart went off another house?
Didn't go off. He just had a problem. One of the greatest came. Lady Lansdowne. The American. He did commit suicide. As did our daughter. With some kind of hunting gun. Gunroom of the fellows which is in the great country house in Lenzan.
Besides Patricia around that period, there was someone called Penelope, who appears to be a very good friend.
Oh yes, that's quite a few. She was Belkin's daughter. She was daughter of the man who persuaded Jennifer to enjoy herself.
Yes.
And I met her with him. I knew him in Washington. He lived with a man called Morrison, the old King's men, and they lived in a house, and Belkin worked for the League of Nations in Washington for the drug control. They moved. Penelope Belkin was she began by being. She's alive, she called Penelope Belkin. And she was a pretty girl in Washington, her father's daughter. And he brought me to Oxford. I didn't know that well, but I knew her. I was talking about getting to Women's College. I've told you this story about her and me and Freddie. Who was I better?
Washington, Washington.
40. Right. Autumn. I was here between. No, I'm 45 minutes ago then. 1946. I came back from Moscow in January 1946. And I went to America, probably, in something like end of January, beginning of February, 1946, right after this. And that 1 month I lived in New College. Fell kidnapped with his daughter. A very pretty girl. Broke up and came in math. She came in as a kind of student to get her into a woman's college in Oxford. And he brought her to lunch with me in New College. And on the way to New College, I met Lydia in the street. He was then fellow warden. And I thought, oh well, I did ask him as well. With the pants. He came and he told me, I was about to have a little lunch, and then Freddie left. Then I said to Penelope, quite very mistakenly, he said that, Freddie, don't you really think about me? Any dangerous man? Don Jordan? Did you hear Russia? I said that and went off to Washington. Then I came back to Oxford in May 46, April, and Penelope was here, trying to get the book to go through, and I offered tea. And she, I asked her what she did, and what she was doing. It was, she's a great friend of British independence from America, and from Cambridge, Mass. And I asked what she was doing, and she said, well, didn't see very many people. But she did see my friend, there. So I thought it was a very charming. I picked the word. So then, I remember ringing up on him to talk to Freddie, and he said, obviously I was just left. Did you leave alone? No, I left with the lady. The lady then came to stay with me the next day. And then, that sounds like Falstaff. And you remember in the opera, and also in what's it called, in the Maywise Windsor. So it's identical. Identical, two ladies. Yes. Like is it La Clos?
It's like the Mayor's on Monterey.
Same letter.
Yeah.
Identical.
Yeah.
It's obviously topless. And it happened sometimes. Anyway, after that, there was Turtle Beach.
Yeah.
And they said he was absolute monster. Terrible, false man. Freaky, hollow, and nothing to him. And Patricia telephoned him saying he was coming to London to see him. Never seen him again. Didn't complain. And Freddie thought I'd done this. Accused me of getting in between. I was in fact innocent. But I was not displeased. I was still in love with that some sense. And that's the end of that. And then they stayed with each other in Switzerland, continued the very charm, and Freddie was out. I remember Freddie coming to dinner with me in New York. And en route, New College, he'd apparently met Penelope, who was still living there, and she said terrible things. He was terribly upset, couldn't he? He said, it wasn't lovely, but being insulted by girls, when we had a tradition to this.
For her?
Oh, yes. And then she went back to their father, and I kept up with her, and then gradually, then she married Michael Douglas, who was, I think, something medical in LSE. Medical, social medicine, something. And then went off ahead. And is now not quite confined, but I'm not sure at all. She's not quite normal. She's come and see me on Arlene. She's quite nice to her. She's very boring to meet. Wanders her mind. She's not happy. But I mean, Freddie, Patricia, so long. Patricia, meanwhile, died. And
Patricia,
Vendel, yes. And I bet you I'm not better this. No, what happened? I was not in touch with her. She came once or twice to Oxford in the 46th Fulton. Said, where I was married. And mainly, she, by this time she married a man called Honek, who was a Yugoslav volunteer. Who was writing. Was already married somebody else. Already had two wives. She became a third. Menage a quatre. Which is what she would have liked. Patricia, you see what I mean? And she married him formally. And probably helped him to forge that edge. He was quite good at it. I never met him. And one of his non-wives married Albert Urani, an Arabic Arabian. But she used to go and see her. She was quite good terms with her co-wife. And en route to come see me in New College in Eddington. Came to lunch with me and Aline once or twice. He turned a very short, passionate affair with his brother in Paris for about 4 days. En route. And then I saw her in London once or twice. Quite liked her. Quite liked her, nothing very much. She knew about my non-religion. And at this time I was very in love with Aline. And after lunch in London, I went and lunch there alone, had quite a nice time, she told me about the late flowers. And then she disappeared at night. No more letters, no more visits. There was one more time when she came to see this Urani, but I wasn't in Oxford. So she wrote, Aline said she'll be glad to see her alone. I wouldn't be there, so she didn't come. Then I heard about her from time to time from a man called Alistair Forbes, who was in love with her also once, and who, you know who he is. She ruined him, really. He didn't ruin me. I mean, he bought a house we were married to. He kept in touch with her. Kept in touch with her. She went to New Mexico, stayed with neighborhood of Lewin, went to his office. She went to India, there are shams. I didn't really know what happened. Every 3-4 years I used to meet Ellie Ford somewhere. He used to tell me what was going on. But I mean, nothing very concrete. I had lots of children. Some by Ben Vendon, some by Hoyleck, some for all I know by other people. And then, years later, about 3 years later, she died in England. And Ellie Ford went to her testimony. She talked to him. He told me that. Then, nothing, she died of cancer. And then she came to the end. Very devoted to her. Then he wrote a picture of her in the Daily Telegraph.
Yeah, I saw
that. We saw that. Which went down very badly with our family. Because it felt too much.
Yeah.
Then I was invited to the funeral for memorial service, after we left, in Captain Common.
Yeah.
And was asked to make a speech about her. By her son, by Honor. And I said I couldn't do that because I never made speeches, but I would write something. So I wrote the piece I would have said, which was about her, what she was like when I knew. And this was read aloud by somebody else. I went, and all the other speeches made her out to be great religious saint. I'm telling you, this is my piece is not too well received. I was very polite about her, but I did imply that she was a social person, and that she, you might even say amorous, but I mean, and she, you were very in love with her, and she moved along society, all these things, you see. She was a great religion. She was, took an interest about the Indian religion, made in Christianity, she knew all the people in the congregation. The clergyman made a tremendous speech about the Bride of Christ. The Bride of Christ, and she was deeply religious, and wonderful, noble, wonderful, self-sacrificing, great spiritual influence of them all. Very much unlike anybody I'd ever known. Especially unlike.
That's a very good story, and it's very like Bruce Chaplin's, my great friend, when he died, we all took off the Greek Orthodox Church off Moscow Road. We went in to a service in which there was a great deal of Greek Orthodox ululation for about 45 minutes. We all sat there all stunned silence. And the Orthodox guy got up and basically said, "He's one of ours. You know, Bruce
not true.
It was rather the same thing. That is, you know, here was a man who's a very active homosexual. Half of the room was full of his lovers. The rest of them were full of people like me who were friends of his as heterosexuals. Nobody, his religious side was there, but I mean, for God's sake.
No, but in the traditional case, the last 10 years did partly consist of wandering.
Of this, yes.
But in Indians and Mexicans and Christians and Japan and all kinds of things. There was about some kind of spiritual wandering occurred. So the book became some kind of confused mystical searcher for the truth and God and truth. But I think Gary Pope bore that out.
Yeah.
But I never made any friends of hers in that period. She was just very died in the arms of this community.
The last question, and then I will stop torturing you, which is that it's again from the same period, 45-46. Very intense letters to you from someone called Clarissa.
Churchill.
Clarissa
Churchill. Clarissa Eden. She's still alive, still about.
Yeah.
Clarissa, what's she called now? Clarissa Avon. Countess of Avon.
Yeah.
Churchill's niece. She was a friend, yes. I knew Paul Walker, she was a friend of David Central, I think. She came to live in Oxford in 39 because the blackout in London was rather agreeable. I was born in Oxford, which didn't count very much. We had kind of a little season of little trees in London.
Yeah.
She came here and somebody called Gay Margeson, who married the Queen Secretary, came here, and some other people, Sir McLean. All those characters appeared, and I made friends with her, and didn't see her. No, then she had I will continue it. My friend did tell her. That's all.
Yeah.
But she wrote me a letter to Moscow, which she denies writing. This day, when I was in Moscow, say, when I first knew you were sort of innocent and pure Don, it seems like, now it's been turned by society, and I told him, you mustn't continue. This is not your world. You'll perish in it. No, seriously. This is more like people like us. No good people like you. That is entirely about petition. Oh, she clearly jokes. Well, I never loved her. I was reproached for corrupting myself. To introduce myself. Clarissa it was who introduced her to the very people. 44. That's her only very grand hostesses. And that took me up. Well, I had this very, not Gilbeck, no, Renard. But I had a very real social season between 1944 and 1953. I used to go to people's houses. I used to dine a lot in London with smart persons. I knew very best of all the little parties. I knew Top Cooper and Diana Cooper. I knew Brian Hoppenstahl and his wife. I knew somebody called Anthony Head and his wife, various sort of half political, half social persons.
Yeah.
I was taken up, as you may say. He used occasionally to go, not very much, just go to dinner parties. That's all he knew.
And in some sense, Clarissa Churchill
was part of it.
Introduced you.
To this wicked lady Bernard. If I'd known Lady Bernard's friend Ribbentrop, I think I might not cultivate her. But as it was, she introduced me, yes. And I never looked back. And then I threw them, let people to know them, they in turn asked me, and I had a sort of social thing, which is a very continuation. My life in Washington was difficult to take to. My Mary Berlin, Bob. No, I'm not wanting to go to the same houses. She didn't really like society very much. We weren't on knowing people.
Yes.
Not in a very active way. But I was sort of eligible bachelor. I mean, there I was, I could be out to dinner with an extra man.
Yes.
I was also rather afraid of being a social fool, just amusing these people.
Yes.
But I kept
being collected by them.
Yes. So I made friends with them. I made friends with Diana Cooper, with seen the cabaret in the museum. The first one being the good. We print something called Todd Head. We print with Fortinet Quiz. They were friends with David Sutton too. He was a great friend. He told me to do it. My father mocked him, saying when I used to come home in the evening and say to my parents throughout this, say, oh, Puff, Dot, Bip, Bop, Moop, Cop, three or other friends call you.
Good for your father.
Very good.
That shows a lot of spirit.
Certainly.
To this day, Stuart, I don't think he's being in the street, Stuart after slightly chides you for
the
your
doubt.
Association with Emerald Kid Arts and the Colfax.
Quite,
very
quite
long
right.
Dead.
Quite it was. It was perfect work there. She was a rather busy hostess with people to lunch every day.
Yeah.
And it was not very uninteresting herself to collect people.
Yeah.
Harold Nicholson was a sort of host. And we forgot to who were invited to leave.
Yeah.
I never knew of that. But he's quite right, Stuart. I did have a more dappy idea. And then it came to an end. Snubbish. Am I snubbish? Yes. That's the element of snubbery I do have, I think. I'm probably pleased to know important and interesting people more than not. And I don't think I in that way. Not very snubbish, mildly.
Was Clarissa married to Eden and our butler?
And then she married Eden the little one. She married Eden, I would think. By 2 years before the series, 54.
Uh-huh.
Very faithful to him, looked after him when he was still a very, very well-weather friend. Looked after him the rest of the day. He's now looking after Goodman.
Oh, is
he? Yes. Same way. He bought a big bed in London. In the hospital.
Is she worth talking to,
you think? Yes, I didn't have to like her at all. Or if she would talk. Would try. But at the moment, she's got a house near Oxford. You might have to go see her there. Or you could see her now, if she agreed. Maybe we'll have to write her now. She'll have her address in London. I can't give you.
No hurry.
Yes, she's done many years.
No.
She's done it since 40. Right. Good this time.
I think I should stop my Zionist torture must cannot go on.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you. What time is it?
We'd like to know. 20 minutes to 5. Have you stayed in the town?
Well, I'm going to dinner tonight with Alistair Moore.
How did I know the legend? I know he's your benefactor.
I hardly know him, but I feel...
He's not nasty. He's just a rather... In a way, it's not mildly right-wing, rather Philistine Englishman, whereas it's huge like my fellow. There are a number of various club names. Nothing really wrong with him, he's actually very pretty white. So, probably cool type. Big, huge. So, he's a good world figure. I don't know why, but I find him unattractive. Charmless. I'm not a bully.
I agree.
I'm not a kid.
I'm not
a kid. I'm not a kid. So I want to know why you're writing about me.
Yeah.
You have to give him some kind of explanation. If you won't like me very much.
Why?
He doesn't like me very much. He can't. He's very, very nice to me when we meet.
Yeah.
So perhaps he doesn't feel when it's like, distaste for him.
Yeah.
But in fact, like that. Your dining room next to him, so to speak.
Yes, it's the last high table that's next.
What do you mean by last? You mean occasion
for the turn.
No more high tables.
For this turn.
No, nothing there.
Right.
It's moving.
Child.
With unnecessary. Acted wonder. So it was superb in a way. But of course, tears under my eyes. My mind is dead, because I thought on the whole, just tear dragging it. And deep. Current vulgarity, even if it was like that in life.
What was C.S. Lewis like?
He was a great big red-faced bully. sort of great big bully. He was, knew what he wanted. Started to type as a philosopher in junior, then switched to English. He, simple-minded, naive, schoolboy-like, strong views, black and white. If you were black, you were out. He was a pugilist. He was a Ulster high church, he was a high church. High church, not Catholic. Maurice Barra described him as looking like a butler in not very good colours. He did look like a butler. That's why he could have, this man could have acted as a butler, to be right. He was dogmatic, but the chief thing about him, he lived there for 2 years, the two thousand tastes with the literature as well. He was certainly religious and certainly conservative, deeply, hated women, and didn't want to be elected to any job, not, and fought against Helen Gardner being made in. All that. He was a pre-Raphaelite. So were his friends, so was Paul Keane, and so was Mary Merton, whose name I've forgotten. Their dates were the dates of his realness. They liked the late Middle Ages, the early Renaissance. They hated everything else. But that they loved. The exact time in Tasso and Bore, just Middle Ages one.
It appears that C.S. Lewis, that Lewis was at that famous dinner where you first met Virginia Woolf.
He was. He was at the opposite end of the table with Crossman and Mrs. Fisher, who was very useful. And they were just shouting at each other. Crossman would say, Uppingham is a hearty school. Don't you think I love Uppingham? And Mrs. Fisher said, I quite agree with you. Very masculine reception. And Louis said, I joined in. And he didn't speak in his own words. And he said, I couldn't and wouldn't.
Did you have extensive dealings with him, or just occasionally?
No, I was a very used to have dinner here in Emotion. Quite approved of me, because although I was a philosopher, I had some kind of touch of culture of some sort. I said, I tell you two things about him. My last meeting with him. He invited me to dine to at the Emotion. I thought that was sort of all right. Wasn't an easy, wasn't namby-pamby, wasn't unsick, sort of thing, York of things. And my third dinner with him. And I did not belong to the society which he founded. It's called, they talk about religious philosophy. That's in sort of philosophy. Nobody else. Anyway, first time I was dinner with